Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go, this is it!
This is Top Flight Time Machine, I am Andy Dawson, pow pow pow!
I'm Sam Delaney, so what?
Welcome along to the second episode of the Owen Odyssey, Michael Owen's autobiography reboot! Whereas you correctly identified last week, Sam, Michael Owen tries to reinvent himself, you know, as a cool leather jacket wearing,
edgy,
motorbike riding, sunglasses wearing...
Cigarette smoking.
Edgelord.
Basing his new characteristics mainly on Sid Snot off of Kenny Everett.
Yeah.
You know the way he used to try and throw the fag into his mouth?
Cool style. Spinning up and catching his gob. And he did it once, didn't he?
He did it once.
And he looked stunned
Sid
and he'd done it.
Sid Snot.
that's where we're at. This is the second one. Last week we looked at the build-up to the 98 World Cup. And the training camp at La Manga. And now this is chapter 5 in the book, where the tournament starts and Michael gets involved as a fresh face. Was he 18 at the time, I think?
Yeah, I think he might have even been younger. I think he broke in at 17.
Still 17? Fucking
hell. I mean, it's one of the most... People do forget. I mean, Michael Owen's rise to stardom is one of the greatest footballing stories of a generation.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in the end, it was sort of almost matched by Rooney. Rooney probably had a more successful career overall, but Owen, no one shot onto the scene quite like Owen did.
He was 18. I've just had a little look.
Okay, so I think he was 17 when he made his debut for England, and then he was 18 by the time he went to the World Cup.
He scored on his debut in May 97, so that was at the end of the 96-97 season, but then... in his first full season, which was 97-98, he was joint top scorer in the Premier League. So it was just bang.
I think I saw him play at the beginning of that season. I weirdly ended up at a Crystal Palace versus Liverpool game for reasons I can't remember. I think it was like a Palace friend of mine had some spares or something. And you know what it's like after the summer, like... Probably West Ham weren't playing that day, and after some, you're so gagging for football that for the first couple of weeks of a football season, you're like, I will go to any football
match. I'll take anything,
I think I went to Palace Liverpool, and I remember seeing Michael Owen score a penalty and being shocked at times as well, because I was only vaguely aware of his name, and he started because there was injuries, and that was quite a big story that they were starting this 17-year-old. And I think they might have won 1-0 or draw 1-1, but I remember they got the penalty and they handed the ball to him, which was fucking insane.
Let the kid take
it. It's like, why are they letting the kid take the penalty? He scored it. So I knew that that man-child had what it took.
But I mean, he's almost been erased from Liverpool history now because they can't stand him because he played for Manchester United.
Yes.
Which is weird, but there you are.
It's really weird, yeah. But he goes into that a huge amount later in this book.
We'll get to that then.
he's very aware of it, and he's obviously disgruntled and disappointed by it, because if you are part of the Liverpool sort of Hall of Fame, then there's a huge amount of benefits in it for you, I think. You know, the gods of this club, the men who've walked down that famous tunnel, and touched the This Is Anfield sign and scored in front of the cop on those nights that in the cauldron atmosphere of the cop.
The cop that was built by Sir John Cop with his bare hands back in 1862.
And the cop was once stood upon by John Lennon, Cilla Black, John Bishop,
Jimmy Tarbuck, Tom O'Connor.
They all stood there.
Hands off.
Cherie Blair.
of the Beatles. But well, he was an Everton fan when he was a kid, so fuck him. You know, don't support Everton, then sign for Liverpool, and then get the hump when they tell you to fuck off.
Yeah, but they go, you know, that, the men who have done that are elevated in our hearts to God's status. Robbie Fowler, Ian Rush, Ian St. John. These men are gods. Not Michael Owen, though.
He's a cunt.
John Aldridge. Carl Heinz Riedler. Roger Hunt. I could do this all day. I love it.
Les Dennis.
Just saying names of Liverpool strikers.
I think Les Dennis is a scouser as well. Him too.
Mario Balotelli.
Danny Ings.
Ricky Lambert.
Yeah, we could do that all day, but let's not, eh? Yeah, we're at the 1998 World Cup, Sam, in France.
Yeah.
And Eddie Days. Michael says in the book, as Glenn had intimated, I sat on the bench for the vast majority of the first game at Le Stade Velodrome against Tunisia. Shearer scored in the first half, and then Scholesy added a bit of gloss to the performance with a last-minute curler to kill off a spirited Tunisia side. I remember watching that in the pub, actually.
Oh, yeah. I remember watching that at my mate Joe's house.
It wasn't...
Vivid memory.
It wasn't a spectacular start. It was workmanlike, wasn't it? They got the job done and they got the result.
Yeah. England World Cups often start that way. Yeah. We don't like set everything on fire. There's a lot of stress and tension about the team. But I remember Scholes' second goal very well. Because Scholes was only just emerging. After they, as we talked about in the last episode, dropped Gazza, no one quite knew who was going to fill the role of the creative linchpin. And it turned out to be Scholes, who, when he first played for United, had played up front.
He did, yeah.
But no one at the time regarded Scholes as anything more than a promising youngster. Mm. And I think Hoddle must have seen something in him, and it must have informed his decision to drop Gazza a lot, because he thought, this guy's got the lot.
Yeah.
He couldn't go at pace past people like Gascoigne, but he was probably... in some ways better that in terms of his way of like dictating the game from midfield.
Yeah.
And but at the time we didn't know how brilliant he was going to be. And then he scored an absolute fucking peach of a goal in this game.
I think as well, Hoddle will realise that Scholes didn't have any kind of off-field reliance on wine and sleeping pills.
And exactly.
Playing video That's games. What... So that probably was a tick in his box
as
well.
Yeah. Yeah, he thought, I can rely on a man like Scholesy. Yeah. He doesn't need a special Scholesy room stocked up with wine and pills. Scholesy rig. Yeah.
But, and a little bit earlier in the book as well, Owen says that Hoddle had said that basically Shearer and Sheringham are me partnership, but they're there to be broken up. That's your job, is to put pressure on them and take the place of one of them. Mm. So... he said, coming on in this scenario, he came on as a sub. It was a no-win situation. As good as it was to be comfortable in the game, because I wanted to start the next game, I needed us to be drawing 0-0 so that I could come on and score the winner. As it was, I was sent on there in the boiling heat just to keep the ball and kill the game. I like that. That's a bit of a change from when you get footballers that say, or they get interviewed after a match, they say, well, you scored 2 goals today. But how are you feeling about that? And they all go, well, you know, that's nice to get the goals, but it's all about the team getting the win. That's the main thing for me. He's gone.
Yeah.
I wish I'd come on and scored the winner here.
Yeah, that's exactly what he says all the way through the book, which is one of the things in this book that I do respect him for.
Yeah.
Because he is very, like, his whole mindset. You do get very deep inside Michael Owen's mindset in this. And there's not much to discover. It's not like being in Roy Keane's mindset.
It's a very roomy mind.
Yeah, but what it is that he is completely tunnel-visioned about goals. That's all he's interested in. And he's interested in his own goal scoring. Mm. And I think, obviously, you need that. That's what drives you. You know, those real, like, you know, amazing goal scorers, they all have that. And he's very frank about it. He goes, all I cared about was my own goal scoring.
There's a hell of a lot to be said for that. When we had Kevin Phillips at Sunderland, he was a similar player to Owen. He would just be Johnny on the spot. And he'd be there, he'd put the ball in the net. He had the knack of being in the right place at the right time, and he'd finish nine times out of ten, and you get a goal. And then, as it went on, we'd had two seasons in the Premier League, and he started trying to build his all-round game up, and he started to come deep more often and pick the ball up and start to bring other players in. And he was never the same player again.
West Ham have got the problem at the moment. Like, we've signed this player, Haller, and he cost 45 million quid. And he can't score, right? And in fact, he's not really doing much at all. People are pissed off with him. And you think, how the fuck did we spend 45 million quid on him? But now a lot of the hipsters have got involved on Twitter.
Oh, right, yeah.
And have sent it, because he played for Eintracht Frankfurt, which, of course, the hipsters love.
Have they produced some spreadsheets?
They've produced some spreadsheets to demonstrate
heat maps.
Why the reason he was brilliant at Eintracht Frankfurt is he had a strike partner, and his job was very simple. It was to stay in the box and score goals. And now he's put up front on his own.
Yeah.
And his job is actually, the goal scoring bit is sort of secondary. Mm. He's supposed to hold the ball up, lay it off, and bring others into the game. So he has to run the whole front line on his own. He's constantly knackered. Mm. He looks like he's got the fucking hump about being asked to do it, to be honest. And so it is a case of, you bought a player on the basis of how he played at one club, and then you bought him for a huge amount of money and asked him to do something very different for you. Waste of money. But generally speaking, it's like what you're saying. It's like all this other stuff that strikers are supposed to do these days, completely overrated. Mm. Get yourself a Gary Lineker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it's that two up top thing's an anomaly now. We don't have teams that play with two up top. All these forwards are that one man forward line that's supposed to be able to do everything.
You know what? I hate it.
Yeah.
It's okay. When I look at the things in the modern game that I hate, obviously number one is VAR, right? But number two, no, actually, number one is fan parks. Let's not get too deep into this. We'll think too many things. But right up there is the trend for lone strikers.
Yeah.
I want two strikers.
Yeah.
I want two strikers in any team I watch.
And I want a big man and a little man.
I want a big cunt, right? And I want a nippy little one.
Yeah.
I want the big cunt to bully defenders, flick it on, and the little one to tap them in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I'll accept a sort of a Lineker Beardsley, where one's a finisher and the other one's a creator.
Go on then,
McAvennie and Cotty.
Yeah.
They were both quite small. And Shearer and Sheringham, of course. One, a loudmouth Cockney. The other one, a grumpy Geordie.
Yeah.
Ah, a bit like us. I mean, I'm not calling you a Geordie.
Yeah,
but
I'll take that, yeah. But I'm just referring basically to Quinn and Phillips, because that's the best partnership I've ever
Quinn
seen.
Quinn and Phillips was a classic, wasn't it? Absolute classic.
And it was when Quinn started to get injured a bit more that Phillips started to come deep and sort of change his game, because he had to, because that big man wasn't there anymore.
You should have just got another Quinn. I mean, actually, you can find them. You can go down into the lower divisions and find that. I mean, no disrespect to Quinn, but you can get a reserve Quinn.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm now literally it's still the early noughties or late 90s, and I'm talking about it.
In our
minds,
it kind of really is, isn't it?
It's too late now. In our minds, it's always the mid 90s.
Where were we? So he just wants to be the hero. He wants to get on and just score goals, and he doesn't really give a fuck about the team.
Yeah.
He says, oh, well, then there's a little bit of criticism of Glenn Hoddle comes next. He says, at this stage, it's important to mention that if the gaffer had a weakness at all, as brilliant a tactician as he was, it was that he thought everybody should be as good as he was. And he was bloody good. This has been said before about Hoddle, hasn't it? And
yeah,
it's said about a lot of managers
criticism.
that don't really succeed because they were extraordinary players, and then they end up being coaches or managers, and they can't get their heads around the fact that their charges aren't as good as I think.
But especially if you're Hoddle, someone shared a clip the other day. I'm going to dig it out. I think I retweeted it about Hoddle. It was the best bits of Hoddle while he played for Monaco.
Mm.
And it was so amazing. I mean, you see a lot of clips nowadays on football, on Twitter and YouTube, of players doing outrageous things. But Hoddle, I mean, it took the piss. It was like, you know, it was beyond anything you've seen. Like, not just, he was famous for those long passes, wasn't he? But the fucking flicks he did were just outrageous. He was an incredible fucking player, and it was unfair of him, to compare himself to anyone else.
And when he was there as well, France was the place in Europe to go for that sort of football, wasn't it? That was where the exotic, skillful football was all played. Spain and Italy, not so much.
Do you remember who he went with, though? Who the other English lad at Monaco playing under Arsene Wenger was? at the same time as Hoddle?
I can't remember.
Mark Hatley.
Fucking hell, yeah.
And that's weird, isn't it? Because you couldn't get, of that generation of English players, they're probably polar opposites.
Yeah.
Because Hoddle was all grace and culture and skill. And Hatley is almost like the quintessential big man up front.
Big man, wasn't he? Yeah. We had.
And I think he'd been at AC Milan, weirdly. And then he went to fucking Monaco under Arsene Wenger.
Yeah, yeah.
Arsene Wenger was the manager. So he obviously saw something in Hatley, yeah.
I mean, when we had Quinn, our number two big man was Diccio.
Oh,
Danny,
yeah.
Diccio, who was kind of like a poor man's Hatley.
He was, yeah. He had long hair. He fancied himself as something of a DJ when he was away from the game, didn't he?
Yeah.
And he also claimed to be Italian, which he thought made him seem more glamorous.
Yeah. Thing is, though, in that season, the season we went up with 105 points from the Championship, Phillips and Quinn were both injured for a long time, and Diccio and Michael Bridges were our front two, and we still kept doing it.
Fucking
there
hell.
You go. Something to
Bridges,
think about,
he was a good player. Yeah. I liked him. He should have played for England. I don't know what happened to him.
Got a bad injury, yeah. One season at Leeds, and he got a bad injury. We should do a podcast about the old Premier League season, shouldn't we?
We should, yeah. It's quite interesting. I'm quite enjoying it.
I don't know what we call it, though.
Jalapeño.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jalapeño.
So, yeah, he says that he thought everyone should be as good as he was. I think this is something that was levelled at Roy Keane as well. When Keane was managing, he would get frustrated that the players weren't doing what he wanted them to do because they fucking couldn't. Or they didn't have that same level of desire and hunger that he had because he was fucking mad. He says Hoddle had devised a complex free-kick routine whereby Bex was going to run up and hit it while Scholes was to put his foot right in front of the ball. The gaffer's idea was, when it hit Scholes' foot, the ball would acquire massive amounts of top spin that would send it up, then bring it rapidly down. It's clever.
Wow.
It's very clever.
Wow.
We started practicing this. He says, after a few goes, Bex couldn't do it. Then Scholes, he tries it. He couldn't do it either. Meanwhile, the gaffer started to lose his head a little because he could do it, but nobody else could.
And why can't you do it, lads?
Yes.
I'm losing my head here. It's quite simple.
Very easy.
You just put top spin on the ball. You're in a situation. That's what Glenn always says, doesn't he? Yeah. Situation. It's his favourite word. He goes, we're in a no top spin situation here. Mm. And it's a situation that I am struggling to deal with.
Yeah.
Bex is like, I never even heard of top spin before. You're making it sound like tennis.
I'm only young. I don't know how to do it. There's a quote there from Glenn. He says, okay, you clearly can't do it. He said, just do what you normally do. So, just fucking hit a free kick. And I think Beckham then did that, didn't he? Scored a great free kick in that tournament. Was it against Romania? Who played after that? After Tunisia?
Yeah, we played Colombia.
That was it, yeah.
We lost to Romania, and then we played Colombia, and we had 2-0. To win to get through. And what I remember about that was that he'd dropped Beckham for Anderton at the beginning of the tournament, which everyone thought was really out of order because Beckham was the one who'd helped them qualify. But he was playing wing-backs and he decided Anderton was a better option at wing-back.
Right.
And and everyone was getting pissed off about it. And then in Colombia, in the Colombia game, having lost to Romania, he had to bring the changes. So he decided to actually continue with Anderton on the right, but bring Beckham into central midfield.
Yeah.
So he could play both of them. And I think it was both of them that scored. I think Anderton scored a pretty good goal to put us 1-0 up. And then Beckham scored a classic Beckham free kick,
didn't he?
Yeah.
Of course, if any of these things that we're talking about are factually incorrect, and you are one of the Lampards who listens to us, please don't get in touch and try and correct us, because
we don't give a shit.
We give no fucks whatsoever.
Who scored, when they scored, it's all fucking irrelevant.
What do you want us to do? Put out an extra episode where we read out your factual corrections? Like that bit in The Guardian where they have a fucking reader's corrections?
Yeah, they call it Lampard's Corner.
Yeah.
Right, listen, you actually, that's quite a good item for the show, Lampard's Corner, yeah. And we just collect like bullshit that people have done. We'll play a little bit of irritating music underneath, and we'll just do it in the Lampard voice and read out everyone's pedantic complaints or corrections. Anyway, we don't care. It doesn't matter. You're listening to the wrong podcast. Bear in mind that last summer we filmed about 2 months talking about a football tournament that had been imagined by my son, who was 7 at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
So we literally talk about shit that's made up most of the time.
Let's see you try and factually correct us on that, you fuckers.
Yeah.
But we'll bring that back in the summer because it annoyed a few people.
Well, yeah, but actually, Earth Tournament this year, which is... Do you remember where it's being held?
Oh, is it India?
Yeah, it's in India. Earth Tournament, the branding's already been more or less completed. There's a new mascot. He's got a really funny name. I can't remember what it is, but I'll let you know soon. And also, sorry, I should have given you more of a heads up on this, but... For reasons that are inexplicable to me, our tournament this year is starting in March.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
Is this to do as a result of Qatar in 2022, the World Cup being moved? Has there been influence from that, do you think?
I don't know. I don't think it's influenced in the least by events in the real world.
Len just wants to get on with it.
I think that's really what it is. I mean, I asked him... And he kind of tried to babble something to make it make sense. But I think he just misses Earth Tournament and he wants it back ASAP.
Yeah, I think
and he's come up with this mascot for it. And so he's like, let's get it on. Let's do this.
Won't be long now.
And I said, but what about the league season in Big Galaxy? He goes, they just pause it while the World Cup, while the Earth Tournament happens.
Do we know how long Earth Tournament's due to go on for this year? Is it like 4 months or something? Because it was long last year, wasn't it? They had a big break in the middle of it.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't happen like that again, because after they got through the semi-final stage, wasn't there like a month before the final?
For a month,
and they all went home.
Yeah.
Which I think is maybe why they ended up losing to Morocco in that final, because I think that they had momentum.
They did.
And the momentum was totally gone by the time they came back to Mexico.
Let's hope we've learned from that. So there's a bit there where he says, at this point in my career, I knew little about many other players. Defenders' attributes, whether they were left-footed or right-footed, didn't even enter my mind. Even if they had, these attributes wouldn't have concerned me at all, because I was so confident about what I could do, I just thought, I'll run past you. And that was it. That was his game at the time. It was, I'm really fucking fast, and I'm great at shooting. And that was it. And that was why he was...
I know. That's his whole thing. It's brilliant. Because when he was a kid, what he did was, his dad had been a pro, but like, you know, at a pretty low level. I think his dad might have played a few times for Everton. But so his dad was one of those dads who was very competitive and drove him to practice football nonstop. But what he reckons he did was he practiced alone, shooting at high speed from every single possible angle in every single possible scenario. So he, you know, from each side, from crosses, from through balls, 6 yards out, 18 yards out, every single thing he reckoned that he'd practiced to death on his own.
Yeah,
right. And in the garden. So I mean, he gets to this in a minute when he describes his goal against Argentina. So he reckons that practice combined with his unnatural speed meant that he knew how to score no matter what, and he always knew when a goal was coming because he could see it three stages before, and he never had any doubt. He'd go, right, this is going to be a goal now.
Cosmos telling him.
Yeah.
Cosmos Chessy called it. He used to do that thing as well. When you were a kid and you were, like, doing sprinting at school, they'd tell you to, like, keep your hands flat so they were almost like blades. Do you know what I mean? And he used to run like that.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's a great way to run. Tom Cruise runs like that, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. To get that little bit extra aerodynamic quality.
I'm gonna start running like that when I go for my little jogs by the river. But it'll look really funny because when I go jogging, I jog really slowly.
Yeah, you're gonna start
because I'm just gonna start doing a short big lumbering instead. Man. But if I run quite slowly, but with my blade hands, it might look a bit better.
Yeah, it'll look really good.
I hope that the other local runners will take to calling me Blade Hands when they see me. Hands.
Wow, he's actually running today. He's not sitting under a tree talking to the tree. Yeah. I might do that as well because I need to get back into running again. I've signed up for a 10K in a couple of months.
Have you? Yeah. Mate, that's amazing. I didn't know that you were still... I knew that you'd started. I didn't know how it was going.
It fell away a bit when we went off on tour last November.
Yeah, it's hard to keep things up.
And I need to get back into it and I've got this 10K looming.
Yeah, it's good to sign up to something. So is it in Sunderland, the 10K?
Yeah, around all the... I think it's a course that's kind of defined by all the Greggs. Shops.
Oh, that's nice. When is it next month or March?
Sometime in May.
Oh, in May. All right, you got plenty of time.
Yeah, of course, no problem. Probably won't do it. There we are. It's like 20 quid.
You know, when I a few years ago, I signed up. Same thing. I wanted to get fit. I'd had a long period of like letting myself go, and I thought. So I wanted to get fit, and so same idea, I signed up, and I'd done a couple of 10Ks in the past, so I decided to sign up for a half marathon. And I signed up for a half marathon, and I thought the way to make sure that I do this half marathon and don't just not turn up on the day, which is all too easy to do, is talk about it out loud. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so
I think that's what I've just done there.
Yeah, and so what I did was I was doing drive time on talk radio at the time, so I started talking about it, but talking about it every day. And we even turned it into a weekly feature, right, which was, I can't remember what we called it, was Sam's Run Club or something. And each week we had a different expert on, whether it was a nutritional expert or whatever, talking, giving me tips about preparing for my half marathon, right, making a really big deal out of it. Then when it was getting to the day, we've been doing this over 6 weeks and I was updating on my training because I've been running every day. And it got to the point where we were, where it was the weekend I was doing it and everyone was on tenterhooks about it. And I fucking turned up on the day and there was no one there and I'd just got the wrong day. And the half marathon had happened the week before.
Oh, you missed it. Shit.
I missed it. And I had to go into the show on Monday and announce, yeah, I didn't do the half marathon. Sorry, I've been talking about it. I just got day wrong. But I did it.
You should have just ran the route.
Well, that's what we did the next week. The next week, we ran the route. But because I was worried that I could, it occurred to me that because it wasn't an official one, I could just turn up on the radio and say, hi, everyone, just so you know, I ran 13 miles at the weekend. Because that could just be bollocks. I made the producers come and the newsreader and some of the guests from the show as well.
Yeah, you were quite power crazy back then, weren't you?
I was pretty power crazy and it was quite funny because I ran it in Richmond Park. It was basically two laps of Richmond Park and the two producers, Mark and Ricky, who of course you know, they hired a tandem bike and they cycled behind me.
Did they have megaphones as well? Shout at you and encourage you. That'd be
cool. Well, their bike broke. I think they were too heavy for it. Their bike broke like about a quarter of the way into the run, so they disappeared. And then the newsreader, Victoria Bourne, remember her?
Oh, yeah.
She's on the BBC now. She came and joined me halfway through.
Oh, did a bit of running.
She ran in normal civilian clothes in an overcoat. Just which was very humbling to me because I was battered. Yeah. She just did it without breaking sweat. And I led her accidentally onto a golf course. We got lost. There's photos of us having to climb out over a fence like from this golf course because I'd taken her the wrong route. It was a Yeah, I mean, it was an absurd carry-on, but I made it in the end.
It's entertaining, though, isn't it? That's what it's all about. Yeah. We're in the entertainment business,
Sam. It's all about content, mate. It's all about content.
And I think this piece of content's come to an end now because we're about to do the Argentina game. We haven't got time to get through it all in this episode. So
we can't just cover that off in 2 minutes.
No, we can't just bang that
anyway, they played against Argentina, who scored the best ever World Cup goal. Bye.
Yeah. Next week, we'll go back to Ripley's. We'll just leave it there, I think. It's been nice.
It's been enjoyable.
Yeah, there's a bit of heat under it. It's doing all right. It's the one thing. We might get a few more weeks out of it. Are you banging something on your desk there?
Yeah, just having a bit of a bang, mate.
Try and edit all those out if I can.
I've got these two batteries microphone, that's and I've been good. Banging them.
Did they teach you that in radio school?
Something to do on your desk. Something to do with my hands, isn't it? Better than wanking.
Yeah.
And healthier than smoking, so...
Right, that's it from this one then. Thanks, everyone. We'll be back with more Mike Owen next week.
TTFN dickheads.
Just rest.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.